Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, the chapter Pure Devotional Service, text 12. Sraginopi etam icchanti. Lokam nirainas tata. Sadakam jnana bhaktibhyam. Ubhayam tad asadakam. Swarginopi itam ichanti. Lokam nirahinastata. Sadakam jnana bhaktibhyam. Ubhayam tad asadhakam. Please chant. Svarginaha, the residents of the heavenly planets. Api, even. Etam, this. Icchanti, desire. Lokam, earth planet. Nirayinaha, the residents of hell. Tata, in the same way. Sadakam, leading to achievement. Jnanam Bhakti Vyam, of transcendental knowledge and love of Godhead. Ubhayam, both heaven and hell. Tat, for that perfection. Asadakam, not useful. Translation. The residents of both heaven and hell desire human birth on the earth planet because human life facilitates the achievement of transcendental knowledge and love of Godhead, whereas neither heavenly nor hellish bodies efficiently provide such opportunities. Purport. Srila Vijiva Goswami points out that in material heaven, one becomes absorbed in extraordinary sense gratification, and in hell, one is absorbed in suffering. In both cases, there is little impetus to acquire transcendental knowledge or pure love of Godhead. Excessive suffering or excessive enjoyment are thus impediments to spiritual advancement. So this chapter is concluding a long discussion about how to perfect one's life, the different processes, and it's been concluded that devotional service is definitely the means and the goal to perfect your life and to satisfy Krishna and to be able to attain that supreme abode of Sri Krishna Goloka Vrindavan. And we've been hearing that that human form of life is that opportunity. We should utilize it to the utmost. And now we're hearing that the best place to do it is right here on the Earth planet. So Prabhupada, I remember saying that the demigods are waiting in line to be born here, which is hard to believe. That they, because it's such a wonderful opportunity and a good place for attaining the opportunity for devotional service. And so human form of life is that time for making that choice of which activities I'm going to perform, which might just throw me off this nice earth planet and send me down or up to hellish or up to the heavenly planets. And so the choices are being watched very carefully by Krishna and all his team that have to delegate our next birth. And so they're watching very carefully of what we're doing and what choices we make, even on a daily basis. Who do we want to associate with today that will maybe deter me from devotional service or maybe encourage me to actually become a pure devotee in this lifetime? So we have to remember that every day, and we have the best chance for remembering that because we have these temples to come to, which are such an inspiration. So there's different concepts of heaven and hell. Of course, most of the population that believe in heaven, they kind of think of it as a wispy place, I guess you could say, where there's clouds and angels and robes and things like that. And then there's others that think it's a little bit more earthly, where you have your dog there and your family members are there and you have the dinner table with the obnoxious things on the table. And then there's another class of people, more of the agnostic crew, that if it's spiritual, then it couldn't have form because spirit isn't anything really. It's just whatever is not material. And so it's pretty much a formless place for those type people. And then there's the real the people that are very creative, and they say that actually heaven is whatever makes you peaceful. So you can kind of create your own heaven. So for myself, it would be a place without ants. I remember one time we used to have sewing marathons in Miami for the deities, and we'd just like stay up all night sewing and sewing. And anyone who sews knows that you're going as fast as you can, and all of a sudden you run out of bobbin, which is a source of thread at the bottom. And one of my friends there, she goes, "In Vaikuntha, I want a sewing machine that has endless bobbin. I never have to stop." So, yeah, we can create our own heaven as far as some people are concerned. And then there's the out-of-body experience people. And they concluded, a lot of them have concluded, that that actually there's that tunnel with the light. So that's, I guess, better than nothing. At least it's going to be bright there and not dark like here in the material world. And then the Christians, they actually have three different concepts of, there's like three different heavens. And one is within the sky that covers the earth. We don't get a description of that. And then we have there's the heaven that's in the stars. And then the last heaven is it must be un, indescribable and unseen. So these are their three heavens. I guess that's pretty much covers all bases, since they don't really know exactly what's going on in any of them. But the Vedic culture, we have some descriptions of different heavenly, you know, still material, but heavenly planets, which go all the way up to Brahmaloka. And then there's the subterranean planets, which are very interesting because they're an imitation heaven. And there's also demons living there. They have their planets, and then the other people have their planets. And they're not as scared of anything. They have everything they want. Everything's fantastic. The only thing they fear is the Sudarshan chakra. Because when that comes, then they know, time's up, my time's up. And then, as it's described here in this verse, then your good deeds are over with, and you're so attached to sense gratification, it's just built up, you've gotten everything you want, and it's still, you know, peaking, then you usually have to come back again and again, and maybe even to the earth planet. Or maybe to the hellish planet. So it's the heavenly planets are most of them, except for, you know, our spiritual planets, which are beyond the Viraja River, the Vaikuntha planets, and the Krishna Loka. The other so-called heavenly planets, they're all pretty much about, I think it's called WIP, what's in it for me? You know, they're still thinking, what am I going to get out of it? That, you know, God owes me something for my good, pious work. And so therefore they're calculating where they, you know, what kind of heavenly planet they want. But to go beyond to the spiritual planets, that requires service. And that's what's happening there. And so if you don't like service, you're never going to make it there. So we are so thankful to Prabhupada that's given us a taste of what it's like to serve and how wonderful it really is. So we have to qualify ourselves to enter those spiritual planets by perfecting our service, filling it with loving devotion. And then there's the descriptions of hell. Prabhupada was in Switzerland one time, and he was at some St. Moritz or something like that, and they thought they were going to kind of be peaceful there and enjoy, and it had a very unexpected snowstorm. And then Prabhupada said, well, go get some provisions, you know, might get stuck here for a while. And so they went out, and they couldn't find anything to cook, nothing to cook. And then no grains, no rice, no milk. And then Prabhupada said, we found farina. And he goes, well, you get the farina, and I'll teach you how to make chapatis with farina. Has anyone ever made chapatis with farina? Lucky soul. I think it was Nanda Kumar tried to make the chapatis with the farina, but that didn't work. And then it was snowing and snowing, and Prabhupada said, what is this Saint Hellish? He called this place Saint Hellish. It was like a tourist, wonderful place, you know. And he was supposed to stay there 2 weeks. He said, we're leaving right away. So he also called England a hellish planet. They were talking about hellish planets in England. He said, yes, this is a hellish planet too. It's always rainy. It's always dark. So that's one concept. And then, he tells that wonderful story in Sheffield, England, where the coal miners were very much busy working in these caves down in the ground. And Christian ministers and priests would go out and to the bars and try to convince these coal miners to take up some pious activities, not do all this drinking and to believe in Jesus, or else they would go to hell. And this is their line to scare them. And many of them had never heard of who was Jesus. What's his number? You know, everyone had a number. And he goes, well, you know, what's hell like? And he said, well, it's all dark and dank, and there's no air, and it's and he goes, well, that's, what's the difference? We're like that all the time. And he goes, no, but there's no newspaper. Oh, horrible, Prabhupada said. Of course, everyone laughed. So he told that story many, many times. So this, you can have hell on earth here. But there's other concepts. In the East, they have, you know, the person falling off the ladder into a dragon jaw, a big mouth. And of course, the Christians believe that there's, you know, fire and brimstone. And it's such a burning, tormenting fire that it actually burns up not only your body, but it burns the soul. So then you're finished. Which is really, you know, pretty desolate. They also understand that you're totally separated from God, and you never get to be with Him again. But in general, most of the conclusions of hell is that there's unending conscious tormenting going on. And even in the Vedic culture, we hear that seems like it's endless. You either get squished, or you get threaded, or you get pricked, or you get burned, or you get, what are some of the other ones? You get pierced, you get juiced. That's another one, you get juiced. There's all kinds of, they're all customized for all the different sinful activities to do. So I think Yamaraj is probably having to have board meetings now that Kali Yuga is progressing, because there's so many more horrific ways to be sinful that they're probably having to think of a whole bunch more, you know, different punishments. But one thing in that Krishna never leaves us and He never gives up on us, and we do have that opportunity to rectify ourselves and not commit these atrocious acts again. So we have an eternal relationship with Krishna, and it's best that we do a lot of work in this lifetime and to perfect that. And so this earth planet is described in here that it is, you know, you're not so attached to sense gratification, because you do get pinpricks, and we do cry, and we do complain. It's not, you know, as hunky-dory, you know, rosy as, you know, some people make it here. And so, you know, the honest soul will admit that, yes, it is a miserable place. Every once in a while I get some relief, and I call that pleasure, but it is miserable. But at the same time, we have time to ask questions and to think about, well, what really is the situation of the soul? Why is it here, and how do I get back? So this is a very good opportunity that we should take part of. Many wishful thinkers think that, oh, you know, Earth planet is not so bad. I'll probably come back again. All right, no big deal. It's not that bad. But, you know, I would like black hair instead of blonde hair this time. And I would like the neighborhood down the road rather than this one. But it, you know, like Divyagna was saying, it's not guaranteed that you're even going to be in America. It's not guaranteed that you're going to have a two-car garage. So it is not that easy. And some people think that their planet's not so bad, that actually I wouldn't mind even becoming a dog here. The dogs have it really good here. So Prabhupada actually blessed some people. Oh, may you become a dog. Go ahead. Unfortunately, they got it. And there's a story of, have you ever heard of Tukaram, who was Lord Chaitanya's disciple? And he actually was such a saintly person that Krishna sent a special vimana down, and he went back in his same body. But he also, Tukaram, had the opportunity to invite his wife to come along and be liberated also, reaping the results of that. And she said, no, I have, you know, I can't leave the, you know, the animals, and I have to take care of this. And she'd rather stay here. How unfortunate. We in the Vedic literature, it's like our trip advisor. It describes that don't stay here on the earth planet either. Go back to the spiritual world. Everything is better there. That then you can revive that loving relationship, and everything is eternal, no suffering. So this is the best choice that we can make. And although Lord Chaitanya has made it very nice here, he's made it very simple for us here on the earth planet. Sociably acceptable, bhajan and kirtan, private meditation of our japa, direct contact with Krishna through deity service. I mean, it can't get much easier to actually become qualified, become purified, and to go back to the spiritual world. So it's the best time, it's the best place, and it's the best process. So we'd be really foolish not to take part in it. And if you've read anything in some magazines, which I did the other day, there are predictions of Kali Yuga for like 2040 and 60 by the silicon tech people, and describing what it's going to be like here. There's going to be artificial intelligence that's going to be smarter than we are to take over. They're proud of it. They think it's going to be great. And then they've got biological manipulation so that the bodies can be all different kinds of things. And then there's robots. So if you ask me, that's hell. Just artificial, intelligence and no privacy whatsoever. Everyone would know what everyone's thinking. You won't have. I mean, it sounds horrible. So don't waste any time. Take advantage of the situation we're in now and get out. And it won't be that difficult. We have these wonderful places. I mean, we've actually created heaven on earth here. And Papa said just looking, like devotees with neck beads and stars and everything, tilak, we look like we're coming by Kunta. Have you ever been, in a place and, some horrible place, and oh, look, there's neck beads, there's tilak. It's like, oh, yeah, heaven. And then, of course, wherever Prabhupada was, that was heaven. I mean, we'd die just to be able to be with Prabhupada again. Although we are with him, but I mean, personally, in his presence. And not only just to see a devotee, but to hear the devotee. That's Vaikuntha, is to hearing that Krishna Katha come out. And of course, our temples and wherever devotional service is heaven. We're fortunate that we've taken this up, and we're getting a taste of the spiritual realm now. And of course, one devotee, Jayananda Prabhu, he also took advantage of this. He was a graduate with an engineering degree, and he was a little older than most of us, quite a bit older. I think he was like 30. We were in our teens still. And he took up devotional service right away. He saw a good thing and he took it. He stopped whatever he was doing in his tracks. And he was the first one to actually give a donation. I think he gave $5,000 to the TLC for teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And not only did he give the money, but after it was printed, Prabhupada gave him half of the books and said, now you go distribute them. So there was a discussion on the beach one time, and Tamal goes, it was when the book distribution was going on, full fire. And he goes, well, who actually started this? And Prabhupada said, Jayananda started book distribution. And by giving that donation, he and then going out, and he had to drive hundreds of miles all up and down the West Coast trying to find places that would take the books. Not easy. Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, to put in a bookstore that, wasn't even close to spiritual things. So it was not easy for him. But Jayananda was the do-the-needful person. That was how he was known as. I joined on almost to the West Coast, but was very, within weeks I went to the West Coast and right to the 1970 Rath Yatra, and Jayananda was there. And I, even when I came to L.A., I heard about this person, Jayananda, what a saint he was. And Prabhupada actually gave him that title as the first saint in ISKCON. Such wonderful qualities. He had a heart of gold, and he was, like it describes the Goswamis, he was friends to the gentle and to the ruffians. He had all kinds of friends. There was one story where he was dealing with some man that had a car dealership and trucks and everything. Sometimes he would borrow the trucks. And I think it was Rath Yatra time, he needed some big, like tow truck. And so he went in to the place to ask the man, and he, first of all, he got all the prasadam he could, all the maha prasadam he could, and put it in his truck to be able to give to the people. He was always full of prasadam. So wherever he met, he would distribute prasadam. And he found out that the man was actually sick and in the hospital. So he went to the hospital with the prasadam, and he came in. And when the man laying in the bed saw Jayananda, he started to cry. And he said, "Sure, take my tow truck." But that's how he actually turned just a normal person's heart into such a loving person. And people loved Jayananda just for what he was. And he was a very giving person. He was always giving prasadam, and always giving devotional service, engaging many, many people in devotional service, whoever he could. I was, during that Rath Yatra, it was time to make the garlands, and there was a room maybe about half his size, and Jayananda pulls up with truckloads of roses. All the garlands on all the carts were just roses. There were boxes and boxes and boxes up to the ceiling of long stem roses. I mean, I don't know who he got to donate it, but he got someone to donate all those roses. And I remember my thumbs were raw at the end. It took us 12 hours of stringing them, because you have to push through that hard stem with the needle. And then they rented a kitchen, and they rented a big hall, like a big warehouse. And he drove up and came with literally tons of fresh apricots for an apricot chutney, which we pitted for 18 hours. And then Gohari cooked it all. And they woke us up at 2 o'clock in the morning and said, "You got to go clean the kitchen. You know, it's a rented kitchen. We got to get clean." And there was splattered apricots all over the whole kitchen. You know, when it gets really thick, it goes all over. And then they put it in garbage cans, and it all spoiled because it was so hot. It couldn't cool off. Pastimes. But all those apricots were donated, and Jayananda got them all donated. He's really an incredible person. Prabhupada considered him that moon in the sky, not just stars, but he was like a moon. And he said, "I'm always thinking of Jayananda." And he would always inquire, "Where is my Jayananda?" And I remember going up to San Francisco for that Rath Yatra, and I went, "Where is this Jayananda? I want to see who he is." And he says, "Well, he's under the car over there." And all I saw were his feet sticking out, you know. He was fixing some vehicle. And then we were in... I tell the same stories because I didn't get so much of an association, but I was, I think it was a couple years after that, I was cooking the Didi offering for Lord Jagannath in the temple in Berkeley. And he had his crew out at the site, and he ran in and said, "My crew is hungry. I got to cook something, halava." And he loved halava. He loved prasadam. And so he, you know, throws about 8 pounds of butter in the wok and a little bit of farina, and it was just like, it was like the beach, you know, when the waves come up. It was just like completely wet. And it was, you know, peanut butter halava, I remember. And then he took it out there to satisfy all the devotees. The greatest story that I always remember, and sometimes I tell it to Jayani Thai when it gets really rough out there and we're having a hard time and it's really difficult what we're doing. We really don't want to do what we're doing out there in the eco farm. And I say, you know, Jayananda, his crew got really disheartened one time, and really, they just didn't want to do it anymore. Was tired. They were, you know, they could see it was going to be an all-nighter, and they just give up, forget it. And they were hungry, and then he didn't have anything. And he goes, "This is my prasadam." And he took a can of grease and went. Hamsaripa said he did that. I can't imagine. But anyway, of course, then they straightened up and they did their service. So. He never complained. He always did whatever had to be done. And he was a very joyful person and really a hard worker. I remember going on Oh, after the Sunday feast, you know, usually we're all satisfied and that's it, you know. But he would take whatever was left and go out to a place on Mission Street where all the bums were. And he would take all the prasadam out there, even though it was late, and distribute the prasadam. And I remember seeing some of the, you know, the homeless people, you know, give donations to Jayananda for the prasadam. One person, I remember, pulled out $5 from his socks and gave it to him. But he would engage all the young and the old. And there's the one young girl. She tells a story about, she was the youngest one in the temple, and Jayananda was a temple president then. He wanted to make sure that everyone was satisfied. And usually they would send all the newest people to him to hang out with and to become purified and to learn submissiveness and everything. But this young lady, Jayananda was so kind to her that he would make sure that after the fancy offerings that he would get all the prasadam and just give it to her, sit her down and make her eat all that prasadam just to make sure. And then the other brahmacharis and things would be complaining, you know, why are you giving all that prasadam? And he would say, she's still growing, so she should have that prasadam and take care of it. And then one time, Muktakesh Prabhu was, this is when Jayananda was later, and he was put into a clinic in San Diego, I believe, and Muktakesh went to visit him, and Jayananda was sleeping on the floor, but there was a bed there, and Muktakesh kind of sat on the edge of the bed to talk to Jayananda, and Jayananda said, no, don't sit there, and he was like, why not? And then he looked over and he said, and he pointed to a picture of Prabhupada. Jayananda had put a picture of Prabhupada on the bed, and he said, you know, I haven't had a bed like, you know, a bed like this, you know, and it should be for the pleasure of Prabhupada. And so he was sleeping on the floor and put a picture of Prabhupada on the bed. So very, very humble and very dedicated to Srila Prabhupada. When he was sick, I remember I was in Portland, he came by, he decided that I've done all the other kinds of service, now I can't do those services, so now I want to travel with the Radha Damodar party. So he joined up with the Radha Damodar party and would cook some. I remember I was there and I was going to cook the Sunday feast, and he came in and said, can I cook the Sunday feast? And I said, sure, go ahead. And he goes, I want to make gulab jamun. And I said, well, I don't even have any ghee. He goes, I'll make it. And he made it in like 5 minutes. He made the ghee and made gulab jamun, and then he made, and he says, I want to make samosas. I said, well, that's a big thing, you know. And, oh, I'll make it. And I remember he actually took a little bit of the filling and popped it in his mouth to taste to make sure it was all right. Because I saw him coming out of the bathroom, just washing out his mouth, and I thought, you know, I said, he's beyond the rules and regulations, you know. He wanted to make sure it was all right for the whole thing. So he was very much my role model in Krishna consciousness. He was not a great scholar. One time, Tamal Krishna Goswami realized that he wasn't, you know, pronouncing everything properly, and he took him to Prabhupada and said, you know, maybe somehow we can teach him how to, you know, pronounce things. And Prabhupada asked him to say some verses or something, and it was way off. And then Prabhupada said, it is hopeless. He says, you boys will never speak in Sanskrit. He says, but your feelings are genuine, and Krishna is accepting. So this was how Prabhupada accepted us and accepted Jayananda, even though he wasn't a great Sanskrit scholar. There was that time, too, the Tamal, I guess they sat down to chant Gayatri, and Jayananda was done in like 2 seconds. And he says, how'd you do that? And he says, oh, I don't know all those mantras, but he was still chanting whatever, I'm sure praying to Krishna for mercy. And he did get the mercy. Prabhupada was very proud of Jayananda, and never complaining. And there's that story when he was during the Ratha Yatra, and some devotee noticed that he was, you know, walking, all bent over, and said, what's wrong, Jayananda? And he says, you promised not to tell until after Ratha Yatra. And he showed him the lumps under his arm, and then he realized he was He had that disease. So, yeah, he was a very simple devotee, but very, very advanced. So, Balabhadra Prabhu, you want to tell some stories?
We were quite young when we came to Hare Krishna. We were quite young when we somehow or another came into Srila Prabhupada's house. And Jayananda, for most of us, Jayananda had already joined with Srila Prabhupada. He was college educated, very intelligent, but also very simple in his thoughts. There was nothing pretentious about Jayananda. And because of his genuine humility, he had no personal agenda as far as, he told me one time, because he, they wanted him to be temple president, which he did shortly in Berkeley, but he had no desire to have any political position, or his desire was simply to serve Srila Prabhupada, to serve the deities, and to serve the devotees. And his humility was so genuine that whoever was around him, they also took on that quality of humility. I had the good fortune to have Jayananda's association for 10 months, 1972. I joined in Hawaii in 69, and I was having some difficulty, and early summer, 72, and Gorsundar, he was the temple president. He sent me to San Francisco, and he only gave me one instruction: associate with Jayananda. So he put me on an airplane at the airport in Honolulu, and got into San Francisco. It was already evening, and by the time I got to the took a bus from the airport into San Francisco. It was already quite late in the evening. And the temple was on Valencia Street in the Mission District. It was a pretty rough neighborhood. So there was always a devotee, at least one devotee, sleeping by the front door or in the main lobby, because there was always drunks and some kind of problems going on. So I'm knocking on the door, and devotee opens it up, and it was about close to midnight, and I said, "Oh, please show me where I can, you know, sleep." So he said, "Here on the floor in the main lobby." And I said, "Please wake me up for Mangalarti." So I woke up for Mangalarti, and went upstairs to where the showers were, and the pujaris were always the first ones up, getting cleaned up so that they could wake up the deities and get ready for Mangalarti. And so this big-bodied devotee comes out of the shower and he says, Haribo. And I say, Haribo. And I said, can you tell me where I can find Jayananda? He said, I am Jayananda. So immediately Krishna put me in that shelter. Of course, we're always in the shelter of Srila Prabhupada and Lord Krishna, but this was, for me, it was extra special mercy. So after the morning program, I connected with Jayananda, and it was only 2 weeks before Rath Yatra. And so there was so much to do. So much to do. Big Rath Yatra, 3 carts. And so Jayananda put me to work doing this and doing that. And then we went down to the area where the carts were being assembled. And this particular year, it was a place all the way down at the beach called Playland by the Sea. It was a defunct carnival type of place, which had gone out of business, and the carts were being made down there. But the only problem with that, or the main problem with that, is the Rath Yatra parade started up in Haight-Ashbury, which was up the hill. So Jayananda was always a little bit concerned, how are we going to get these carts up to the hill, up to Haight-Ashbury, so that the Lord's can be brought from the San Francisco temple and placed on the carts. So, as Mother Kunti was also explaining, Jayananda had this idea that before he became a devotee, he was driving a taxi. And he was thinking, the man who owns the taxi company, it was a small taxi company, it wasn't like huge, but he was thinking that there's a tow truck at the taxi. We should go and talk to the owner and see if he will let us use the tow truck to take the carts up to Haight-Ashbury. So one of Jayananda's distinct trademarks was he always, wherever he went, he had prasadam. And he was always distributing prasadam. Didn't matter who it was. But in this case, he got some very special prasadam. And we went to the taxi company. And Jayananda asked, where is the owner? And we were told that he was in the hospital. He had to have some operation. And we found out what hospital and so on and so forth. So we went to the hospital and we go into the man's room. And as Mother Kuti was explaining, the man started to cry. He was so, so touched by seeing Jayananda. He told Jayananda, you're just like my son. You have come to see me. I'm, you know, very sick, but you have come to see me. You're just like my son. Of course, you may use the tow truck. So Jayananda gave him prasadam, spent some time with him, and the morning of Rath Yatra, Jayananda got the tow truck, and he towed the Rath carts, all 3 of them hooked together. He towed them up the hill from Playland by the Sea, which was right down by the ocean, towed him up to Haight-Ashbury. So Jayananda, and it didn't matter who came to the temple, you know, for a Sunday feast, or brahmacharis or young men were coming and surrendering, and Jayananda was always there to help them. And it wasn't, you know, I'm an older devotee, it was never like that. He'd put his arm around him and take him off, and whatever he was doing, they would do, whether it's taking out the garbage or whatever, going to the flower market. And everybody loved Jayananda. And especially Srila Prabhupada. That loving relationship that they had was so sweet. Jayananda would drive, when Prabhupada would be in the Bay Area, Jayananda would always drive the car, taking Prabhupada wherever he needed to go for this engagement or that engagement. And I remember we would, in the evening, there was no, in the San Francisco temple, there was no place for Srila Prabhupada to stay. And so Prabhupada would stay, I think it was maybe in Richmond, or you'd have to go over the bridge to the other part of the Bay Area. And we would go in the evening. Practically everybody in the temple would get into different cars, and we go over, and the house where Prabhupada was staying with these grihastas had a very big room, which was used for evening darshan with Srila Prabhupada. And somehow or another, this one night, I was in the first car that arrived at the house. So we go in, and there was a few of us, and there was a low table where Srila Prabhupada would sit behind the low table. And within a few minutes, the room had filled up. All the devotees had arrived, and Prabhupada came out. And having bhajan, and then Srila Prabhupada was speaking on different topics. And then his servant came out with a nice a chalice, nice goblet of hot milk. And besides the goblet, there was a spoon. Prabhupada was given a spoon. And Prabhupada started sipping the milk. He would, again, put the spoon in the milk and sip it. It was quite hot. And again. So Prabhupada did this for several minutes. And then he put the spoon down, and he said, milk should be drunk sipping hot. Said, in this way, it goes to the brain and nourishes the brain. And he said, if it's not sipping hot, he said, it simply turns to urine. And then he picks up the spoon, and a few more times he's sipping. And then he puts the spoon down. And so being very nosy, and I'm sitting right, practically speaking, 2 feet away from Srila Prabhupada, so I kind of crane my neck and I'm looking, and the goblet is still half full, but it had cooled off. So Prabhupada had stopped taking the milk. And then he kind of sits back, excuse me, and he looks across the room at all the devotees, and he smiles. But he's looking way in the back of the room. And so I follow that gaze, and who was sitting in the very back of the room? There was several doors that would you could get in and out of this room. In the very back door, there was one devotee sound asleep, leaning up against the wall with his mouth open. And it was Jayananda. But Prabhupada had such a big smile on his face because he knew how hard Jayananda worked to push on Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. So that very special loving exchange between Srila Prabhupada and the devotees was relished. I can't think of anybody who was envious of that relationship between Jayananda and Prabhupada. It was such a heartwarming experience for us to see this genuine loving exchange based on devotional service. When I first joined in Hawaii, there was Gorsinder and Govindadasi had some tapes. And there was one, I believe it was Disappearance Day of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And Vishnujan and his Sankirtan crew, they had just performed for Srila Prabhupada. What they were doing out on the street, and how they would put the carpet down and play the instruments and chant. And then it was time for Prabhupada to give class. And he again is looking around the room. And he said, "Where is Jayananda?" And nobody knew where he was. Obviously, he was doing some service somewhere. And again, Prabhupada says, "Where is Jayananda?" And then the door opens, and in comes Jayananda. Now, Prabhupada had a big garland that he wanted to give to Jayananda. And when Jayananda came into the room, everybody goes, "Ooh!" It was anticipation of this exchange between Srila Prabhupada and Jayananda. There was not a bit of jealousy or everybody was so happy to take part in this loving exchange. It was such a lesson for us to see this love that Srila Prabhupada and Jayananda had for each other. I'm trying to think of this one. I don't think it was San Francisco, because Jayananda was able to get permits for the Rath Yatra without any trouble. But there was one place, it may have been New York, where the devotees were having a hard time getting the permits for the Rath Yatra festival. So Jayananda went down, and the lady who was there, she was she was smitten by Jayananda and by, again, his genuine humility and kindness. And she was feeling that if he is the example of the person who is asking for the permit for this parade, then by all means. And she granted the permit. Now, it was several years, and Jayananda passed away. He had gotten leukemia, but that's another story. Anyway, it was coming time for Rath Yatra again, and a different person showed up to get the permit. Toshan. And she was inquiring, "Where is Jayananda?" And so Toshan informed her that he had passed away. And she broke down in tears. So this was Jayananda's effect on people. It was genuine love, that he was representing for Srila Prabhupada, for Lord Krishna, and for this to come into these people's lives, it was so dramatic and heartfelt. And here's this big, he was an Irishman. He was huge, you know. He could pick up a a basketball with just holding one hand. But he was so kind-hearted and so full of love. I had the good fortune that my wife and I got married in San Francisco in January 1973, and we were both pujaris. I had approached the temple president expressing that I needed to get married, and so there was a couple of Matajis who also needed to get married or wanted to get married. And so my wife was notified that, you know, this brahmachari is thinking to get married, and if you would associate and see if there's a possibility. So we associated for a while. We figured, okay, we'll give it a shot. And in San Francisco, I don't know if it's the same now, but you had to get blood work. And we got married at the City Hall. And about the only time that we could get married during business hours was when the deities took rest after lunch. So the date was fixed, and we did our normal pujari service, gave Krishna lunch, offered arati, put the deities to bed for their after lunch nap. And then we went down to City Hall, and Jayananda was our witness. He went to City Hall with us, and we got married. We have his, James Kaur was his Karmi name, and we have his name on our marriage certificate. But what happened was, being a space cadet, I didn't even have any rings. So during, when the Justice of the Peace asked for the rings, I had no ring for my wife. So Jayananda took, he had a ring. He took his ring off and he said, here, use this. But she was, and still is, a small lady. So for her, she put it on her finger and it was like wearing a bracelet on her finger. It was so large. But then we went back. There was, to the temple, there was a devotee named Vishwareda. And he and his wife were one of the few grihasthas at the time. And they had lunch for some of the devotees up in their apartment. And we went and had lunch. And after lunch, we went back and woke up the deities and proceeded on with life. But Jayananda, he was an incredible, incredible person. So kind to everybody. Never saw him angry. Never saw him upset. He was just always trying to help people develop and make advancement in Krishna consciousness. He had given Prabhupada two donations of $5,000. The first one was for printing. The second one was for medicine. Jayananda had come down with leukemia, which is a type of cancer. And the devotees had tried so many things. He had gone to Tijuana for some treatment. Didn't really work. Tried this and tried that. And then his grandmother, who had given him the first donation for printing, said, I will give you $5,000 for medical treatment. And so he accepted the $5,000, but he gave it to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, no, this is for your treatment, for your medicine. And Jayananda said, no, this body is finished. Why put good money after bad? So Prabhupada accepted the donation based on that logic. Jayananda, he is already understanding that this his body is finished. He doesn't want to waste the money. He wants to engage it in devotional service. So Jayananda did as much devotional service as he could, especially towards Rathyatras, and training up devotees how to carry on doing Rathyatras. And it got to the point, I think 1976 was the last New York Rathyatra he did. Is that 77? Okay. But May 1st.
Because I joined in July and he was
still good. Was that 76 or? Huh. There was a couple of letters that both written by Srila Prabhupada. So this one is a part of a letter that was sent to Rameshwar. Jayananda's death is glorious. It is very good that he had stated, what is the use of such a useless body? Better to give it up. He has left his body very wonderfully, and he has been transferred to Vaikuntha. I have already sent a condolence letter for publication and back to Godhead. Everyone should follow the example of Jayananda. I am very proud that I had such a nice disciple. If possible, Jayananda's picture should be hung in the Rath of Lord Jagannath, and in all of our temples a day may be set aside for holding a festival in his honor, just as we do on the disappearance day of the other great Vaishnavas. Now this letter was sent New Delhi, 11 May 1977. And the other letter this was written, I do believe this was the one that appeared in Back to Godhead. My dear Jayananda, this was written 5 May 1977. My dear Jayananda, please accept my blessings. I'm feeling very intensely your separation. In 1967, you joined me in San Francisco. You were driving my car and chanting Hare Krishna. You were the first man to give me some contribution, $5,000. For printing my Bhagavad Gita. After that, you have rendered very favorable service to Krishna in different ways. I so hope at the time of your death, you were remembering Krishna, and as such, you have been promoted to the eternal association of Krishna. If not, if you had any tinge of material desire, you have gone to the celestial kingdom to live with the demigods for many thousands of years and enjoy the most opulent life of material existence. From there, you can promote yourself to the spiritual world. But even if one fails to promote himself to the spiritual world, at that time, he comes down again on the surface of this globe and takes birth in a big family, like a yogi's, or a Brahmana's, or an aristocratic family, where there is again chance of reviving Krishna consciousness. But as you are hearing Krishna Kirtan, I am sure that you are directly promoted to Krishna Loka. So Jayananda, the leukemia kept getting worse and worse. Everything they tried didn't work. And the $5,000 he gave to Srila Prabhupada. And it got to the point where Jayananda really couldn't do anything. And he was getting worse and worse, and it got to the point where he was pretty much confined to his room. And one evening, there was always devotees chanting with him and to him, and the evening went on, and Jayananda was having a very difficult time. And just before Mangal Arati, I think it was Rameshwar, sent somebody to get Lord Jagannath's garland for Jayananda. And just as Mangal Arati was starting, Lord Jagannath's garland was placed on Jayananda, and the conch shells were blowing to start the arati. Jayananda departed. So we are very fortunate to have had his association and his example of a loving exchange with Srila Prabhupada. And all the devotees, he always loved the devotees and served them and showed a very nice example for us to follow. So on this day, it's nice to remember Jayananda. And there's so many stories that it would take hours. I have a few personal stories, but there are so many devotees who have other personal stories about Jayananda. When I was traveling as the Minister of Cow Protection, I had the good fortune to go to Russia and Ukraine and different other Eastern European countries. And after class, the devotees would say, "Oh, did you have any association with Srila Prabhupada?" And I would say, "Yeah, I had a little." And they said, "Oh, please tell us." So I would tell the few times that I had association with Prabhupada. And then somebody would raise a hand, "Did you have any association with Jayananda?" I said, "Yeah, I had a little bit." And they said, "Please, tell us." So the pastimes with Srila Prabhupada, the eyes of all the devotees are like saucers. They're just, you know, and the ears are just wide open. And the same thing was true about, you know, talking about Jayananda. They were so enamored with Jayananda and his association with Prabhupada and his love of Srila Prabhupada. So Jayananda is very special. As Prabhupada said, he was his first saint, first ISKCON saint.
Balabhad,
yes.
Can I
tell a few minutes? Please, yes, please.
I joined in January of 1974 in San Francisco Temple. So I have a few memories of Jayananda. He was at that time the Harinam Party leader, and every day would take out the devotees who wanted to go in Harinam. Sometimes it was we went to downtown San Francisco and chanted, and sometimes in Berkeley. But I'll tell this beginning at the point in the morning program, because there are a couple of characteristics of Jayananda I'd like to tell you about. One was that he was chanting japa in front of the Vyasa-san. He would sit quite near the Vyasa-san with his eyes closed. And I marked how attentively he was chanting. He didn't open his eyes. He just remained with his eyes closed, sitting and chanting the whole time during japa. And that was also true of how he listened to the class. He would listen with his eyes closed. But he always remembered something from the class. When we went on Harinam, after chanting for some time, he would take a little break and he would preach a little bit about the glories of holy name. And then he would always say, just like the devotee said in class this morning. Then he would repeat something that the devotee had said in the class. He could always remember something from the Bhagavatam class. And this was like later in the day at 11 or 12 o'clock, he would recall something that was said in class. And he would repeat the point for us on Harinam. Then another characteristic of Jayananda was that he always served prasadam. He never sat down in the line of devotees to eat prasadam until he had served every devotee in the room. And he was always serving very kindly. You know, he would ask you very nicely, would you take prasadam? He was really encouraging you to feel happy and take prasadam. And he would make a couple of plates for himself and the servers on the side, and then at the end take prasadam. This was always the case, always. He never sat down to be served prasadam. When we were working on the Rath Yatra carts, we were in a parking lot. The carts were being assembled in an empty parking lot. And in the afternoon, he would go and get the fruit offering, or someone would bring it from the temple. So the way we had our break, the way we had our prasadam break, he had a little altar set up there, just on some steps next to the wall with some pictures. And we would have a little kirtan when we had a break. And then we would have a short reading from Krishna book. And then he would serve the Mahaprasadam to us. And then we'd go back to work. When we went on Harinam, he made it kind of an elaborate service, taking care of the Harinam. He would save the deity garlands, and he would ask the devotees to wear the garlands on Harinam so that they looked as bright as possible. His wife would prepare something like cakes to be distributed to the people. The cake would be cut up and put in baskets, and then the ladies would pass out this cake on the Harinam. We would go, as I said, either to the university area, chant around the University of California, Berkeley, or we would chant in downtown San Francisco. And he would play the drum and chant. He's a great kirtan leader. Srila Prabhupada once remarked about him and his appearance. He said, Jayananda walked into a class that Prabhupada was giving. I wasn't there, but this is on a recording. And he said, "Our Jayananda, he looks just like Lord Chaitanya." Yes, Lord Chaitanya was very, I forget the word he used, very stout. Yes, yes, he said that. And stout and strong. So Jayananda was like that, very tall and charismatic. He looked, you know, he looked like a leader. And one day we went to get the cake at his wife, at the apartment where he lived, and I was in the van, and it was Ekadasi, and I had just joined the temple. This is my very first Ekadasi. And I was thinking, boy, I really don't know much about Ekadasi or why the devotees are fasting, you know. But I know we're going on Harinam, and we're going to take the cake. So Jayananda brought one cake basket out. Then he went back to get some things, and I was thinking, well, you know, the students are going to get this cake. Why shouldn't I? You know, I don't, what's Ekadasi? You know, I'm not that much a devotee yet. I'm more like a student, you know. So I started eating some cake. He came up, he said, "You're eating cake?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "The tongue is the most voracious and difficult to control." That's all he said. Oh, and on the Harinams, we had a really nice time on Harinam. We'd go out in the morning, and we'd have lunch in one of three ways. Either he would save the lunch that was cooked for the devotees at the temple. Somehow it was cooked early, like around 9 o'clock it was ready. So he would put that in containers for us, and we would sit in a park and he would distribute that to us. Or we would go to a congregation member's house. There weren't too many congregation members, but a few. And we would eat there. And this was always preceded by kirtan and a reading, and then prasadam. He always followed that pattern, kirtan, reading, prasadam. Or once in a while we went to the supermarket, and then he would ask us, what do you want from the supermarket? And I said, peanut butter. He said, okay. And then other things would be requested, and then he would make an offering in the park, and we would have lunch from the supermarket. Sometimes, yeah, he liked it. He put it, like Akuti said, he put... How do you take it? Well, I don't remember. I can't remember. Peanut butter and chapati sounds good. Anybody else have a memory?
You mentioned the Tongan being most voracious. So I used to go to Frederick Street, live on Frederick Street, 68. So Jagannath, they bring out the Sunday feast for Shalom. And they didn't have transfer things then. They just had the big pots. And they put a madras on the rug at, you know, Frederick Street. And then he would say the prayer. Tongan's most, you know, English, they didn't have any Bengali, but it was so potent the way he said it. But it made you really brave, even though I was like the least brave person to hear him say it. Also, the way you mentioned about him chanting like this was, Upendra was trying to preach to me, and he said, you could do anything for Krishna, just like Jayananda, he drives a taxi to Swamiji. And I looked over, he was the only one in the temple, and he was sitting opposite the Vyasa-san. Front of the temple, more narrow, I think. And he's sitting like that, straight up. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, with his round neck. And I was thinking, this guy's a taxi driver? Didn't, like, the dots didn't connect in my head. Like, I was just like some gross guy, you know, New York, driving a taxi. Kind of heavy duty guy driving taxis. But him being a taxi driver didn't add up. He was just chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. He looked more like some transcendental, whatever, taxi guy. You can do anything, just one.